Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the city of Gary suing to regain control of the Genesis Center after a high-tech company breached two contracts. Brandon Smith reports Governor Eric Holcomb will not reimpose any mask mandates in Hoosier schools. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with NDOT Northwest Indiana District Communications Director Adam Parkhouse. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The city of Gary is taking a high-tech firm to court for not living up to promises made. Michael Puente reports.
Acumen Technologies was planning to move from its headquarters in California to Gary to make smartphones and other high-tech devices. The company planned to repurpose a seldom-used sports arena in downtown Gary as its new headquarters. Gary says Acumen failed to pay $2.5 million to the city by Tuesday's deadline. As a result, the city is suing the company, seeking back the properties and nearly $30,000 in fees. City spokesman Michael Gonzalez.
Mayor Jerome Prince is considering all kinds of ideas and entertaining new ways of using those properties.
A spokesman for Acumen, which lists Gary as its headquarters on its Facebook page, could not be reached for comment. For Lakeshore Public Radio, I'm Michael Puente.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. The closed and abandoned Lew Wallace High School building in Gary will be demolished yet this year. The old school opened with one wing in 1921 and the rest of the building opened in 1952. The gym was added 20 years later. The Gary Community Schools Board voted 4-2 to completely close Lew Wallace along with five other schools in 2014. The building was reported to need $2.8 million in repairs. Gary Schools manager Paige McNulty says demolition bids are due by August 24th and the Distressed Unit Appeals Board will review them. Dr. McNulty says in a statement that the removal of this former school was not an easy decision, but they're confident that the demolition of a blighted, dangerous structure in Gary will make the community safer and clear the path to better use of the property. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. A federal agency has decided that five metropolitan areas across Indiana, including Michigan City LaPorte, will retain that designation for at least another decade, along with the enhanced federal aid that comes along with it. The Office of Management and Budget recently backed off a proposal to set 100,000 as the minimum population needed to be considered a metropolitan area instead of 50,000 residents. The OMB sought the change because population has doubled since the metropolitan threshold was set in the 1950s. Bipartisan opposition to the proposal, including by Republican U.S. Senators Todd Young and Mike Braun from Indiana, led the agency to keep the designation in place for another 10 years. Young said the change would have made it more difficult for these communities to receive federal resources for housing, transportation, health care, and more.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
President Joe Biden is nominating eight new leaders for U.S. attorney positions across the country, and one of the nominees went to law school in Valparaiso. The Times says Clifford Johnson, if confirmed, would be the first black lawyer to lead the Northern District of Indiana after spending nearly 35 years in that office. U.S. attorneys serve at the president's pleasure and are routinely nominated with a recommendation from a home state senator. The Justice Department's 93 U.S. attorneys who are responsible for federal criminal prosecutions in their respective districts are likely to be central to the efforts to combat violent crime.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
More than 100 drivers at a Pepsi bottling facility in Munster have been on strike for over 2 weeks now. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports the workers are fighting against a proposed increase in health care costs.
The union says health care costs would gradually increase to about 5 times as much as workers are paying now. Although some drivers were offered a raise, they say it would be negated by the increases in health care costs. As negotiations continue, union leaders say they've gotten international union bosses and corporate leadership involved, too. Matt Chikoloff is a trustee of the Teamsters Local 142. He says the decision to strike isn't something they take lightly, since missed work means missed paychecks.
It's a very big deal. You know, we've got members that only have one income in the family. That's even harder for them because that one income ain't coming in right now.
Pepsi told the Times of Northwest Indiana the strike is highly unusual and disruptive since the disputed contract was previously agreed on with union leaders. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Governor Eric Holcomb will not reimpose any mask mandates in Hoosier schools, only urging students, teachers, and staff to mask up amid a surge of COVID-19. The CDC issued guidance Tuesday that recommends anyone in a school setting, even vaccinated people, wear a mask as the Delta variant drives up cases around the country. Indiana previously required masks in school before rescinding that order after June. Holcomb says he recommends taking every safe step possible to keep children in school.
We've seen what a whacking our kiddos have taken with the pandemic over this last year in terms of learning loss, etc. And so we don't want to watch the same movie again.
Masks will still be required on school buses under federal rules. Individual school districts can decide whether to require face coverings in school buildings.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Indiana Department of Health reported more than 1,000 new COVID-19 cases Tuesday. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman explains that comes as cases have continued to spike in the last several weeks.
This is the first time the state has surpassed 1,000 new COVID-19 cases in a day since May 14th. June's daily cases reached a pandemic low average, just 284 cases per day, but cases have begun to climb again. In 3 weeks of July, the state has averaged about 485 cases per day. Of the state's more than 13,500 new cases in the last month, Marion and Allen counties accounted for 3,000. Since Indiana's pandemic low on July 3rd, hospitalizations have nearly doubled, and IDOH reports the vast majority of sampled cases are the more infectious Delta variant at more than 85%. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lauren Chapman.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
It's been a rough year for kids across the country, especially for those in lower-income areas. In one Midwest neighborhood, a small vegetable garden provides fresh food and a safe haven. Side Effects Public Media's Farah Yousry reports.
On the side of a busy parkway in Indianapolis, cars speed past a flood of bright green T-shirts. It's a group of more than 40 high schoolers who gather each morning to work in a vegetable garden. The garden is the size of 2 basketball courts and it brims with tomatoes, cabbage, dill weed, and fragrant mint and basil, as well as a few chickens.
None of this stuff was here in 2019. We really just started all of this stuff. Like, they teach you a lot just by working here.
Kenyatta Reed is a 17-year-old with long braided hair and a beaming smile. She's part of a youth program called the Green Team.
For me, it's really the people. This, like, it feel like a second home. It's not really just about work. Like, it's fun to be here. And you get paid to be here, so it's just double it for me.
The youth get paid as much as $10 an hour. Reed uses that money to help with family bills and to do some shopping for herself. Still, she feels most empowered by the skills and knowledge she learns here.
So here, actually, the marigolds and the basil are protecting the tomatoes from nematodes in the soil.
Phyllis Boyd is the executive director of Groundwork Indie, the nonprofit that has organized this summer program since 2016. She draws from history and her expertise as a botanical and environmental scientist as she teaches the youth how to grow their own food.
So Native Americans used to approach plantings in this way, where you'd have the squash that would spread on the ground and you know, crowd out the weeds. The corn would grow up, and then it would provide a structure for the beans to grow. And so you'd have these all growing together.
And she makes sure her lessons go way beyond how to pair plants and arrange a garden.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we like to do, is not just have youth involved in the hands-on, you know, like work that's, you know, dirty and heavy, and but actually have them engaged in the process of how you think and dream about spaces and how you can change them, and then work on visioning and then planning and design and then implementation. And so they get to see the whole arc of like how you as a person can do stuff in the world.
Granted, there's a lot of stuff that needs to be done in this neighborhood. For starters, the green team had to test the soil for lead contamination when they chose this spot for the garden. Lead is a toxin used in some industries and can be found in soil, old house paint, and water. This neighborhood is a hot spot for lead poisoning in children and elevated lead levels. The garden soil was no exception, but the green team had a solution.
You bring lead-free soil in, and you garden with that soil, and that's what you're in contact with, not the soil that's underneath.
Katie Hawthorne, a 22-year-old program supervisor, says outside of this garden, the youth aren't always given the space to try out things and find creative ways to solve problems.
You know, a lot of them are going to my high school, and I know how I struggled while I was there.
She came to the program during a college internship. She has a degree in public health and anthropology from Purdue University. And like many of the youth here, she struggled to find nurturing, safe spaces.
People not letting kids be kids, and when they say that inner city schools are run like prisons, I think that's a very serious statement. The presence of police, and it's just a very rigid system that doesn't allow for creativity, doesn't allow for them to make mistakes and learn from them in a valuable way.
She says for the green team, this is a place for hope and respite from a harsh reality. They live day in and day out. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Farah Yusri.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with NDOT Northwest Indiana District Communications Director Adam Parkhouse.
It doesn't take many times for someone to get behind the wheel, whether it's a car or a truck or what vehicle it may be, and head out onto Interstate 80-94 and experience for oneself exactly how difficult it is to drive. And it's that way because of all the traffic and what has to be certainly one of the Midwest's busiest interstate highways. We have the Indiana Department of Transportation very much interested in working up a way to help make it easier to travel and safer to travel on 80-94. Adam Parkhouse is the communications director for the NDOT LaPorte District, and he is with us to talk about a series of public meetings, two of them in person this week and one that'll be online next week, to talk more about what is called the 80-94 Flex Road Project. Adam, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
What are some of the things that the researchers at NDOT, that they don't already know, have discovered about the need for making some major improvements and finding different ways to travel on I-80-94?
Sure. So it'll come as no surprise to folks who live and work in and around Lake County that what we call the Borman Expressway, I-94, up in that area, is the busiest stretch of road in the state of Indiana. Nothing in Indianapolis surpasses it, anything like that. So all that traffic, including truck traffic coming to and from Chicago, that stretch of road carries a ton of traffic. So as folks who travel there regularly know, as you mentioned, obviously congestion can be an issue at times. So what we're looking at here through what's called a PEL study, it's a planning and environmental linkages study, is what are some options that we can look at, some kind of innovative tactics that we can use through this corridor to ease some of that congestion along the Borman?
I know that researchers all over, not only the Midwest, but around the country, have been looking for ways to help make expressways, very much like 8094, not only easier to travel, but safer to travel as well. What are some of the ideas that you're asking citizens here in Northwest Indiana to talk about at the series of public meetings that might in turn be incorporated in making some major changes to the Borman Expressway?
Sure. There are several options that would be available to us through what's known as TISMO, T-S-M-O, or Traffic Systems Management and Operations. So there's a number of different possibilities, and that's what we hope the Pell study will sort of reveal. So some of those include what's known as hard shoulder running, where, you know, there is a hard shoulder, like on the inside like there is now, only that becomes like an additional lane of travel during peak time, but only during peak time. And you might say, well, how would you keep traffic off of that hard shoulder when you don't want traffic on there during those peak times? So you may, if you traveled in other parts of the country, you may recall on a busy interstate or something, seeing some overhead gantries that have either like green check marks or red X's indicating to drivers what lanes they can be in at any given time. So a system like that is a possibility. There are things like ramp metering, which basically is kind of a cool high-tech way to measure how traffic is coming off of a ramp and merging onto the main line. And when the traffic coming off that ramp is getting too heavy, it would activate a signal, basically stopping traffic there, or basically, you know, trying to more effectively and efficiently merge traffic from that ramp onto the main line. So there's a number of different things that the Pell will look to, and that's exactly what we want to get the public feedback on in these public meetings that you referenced that are coming up this week, and then the virtual option next week.
I understand that NDOT has incorporated some work with an engineering firm called Parsons on this project. In fact, I guess they're the lead agency on this project, working with NDOT on this. What has the folks at Parsons done so far in getting things set up for public meetings coming up on the 8094 Flex Road project?
Sure. The folks at Parsons are a consultant on this Pell study for us, and they've been just tremendous to work with. And I want to direct folks, your listeners, to a website that our friends at Parsons have created called IndianaFlexRoad.com. That's IndianaFlexRoad.com. Flex Road is the branding that we've assigned to this project. So Flex Road, less stop, more go is sort of the tagline. And that really, I think, and it's got a nice little logo and things like that. So there's some great information on that website, IndianaFlexRoad.com. But we really think that tagline, less stop, more go, really encompasses what we're trying to accomplish here, which is when you're traveling on the Borman, you're traveling on 94, whether you're going to or from Chicago, and of course our partners at IDOT in Illinois are involved in these discussions too, as obviously we're very connected in this endeavor. We can't promise that you'll never have to stop. We're just trying to make it so that you stop a little bit less often, and you're able to. Yeah, go ahead.
That would be a big help in itself when you think about it. And we should mention too that even though NDOT is really taking the lead on this, because most of the worst of 8094 is in Indiana, in Lake County in particular. There are other stretches, the stretch in Illinois, but we're talking about in particular, I guess, going to the west from the state line to Illinois 394. So it's just there are all kinds of ways that that Indiana and Illinois can cooperate in trying to make travel a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a great partnership with our partners over at IDOT, and they've been at the table in discussions on this as well. And you know, this stretch of the Borman on the Indiana side, at least on an average day, we'll see around 180,000-190,000 vehicles, and on a busy day, it can be more like 250,000. And that's to put that into perspective, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
that's a lot of traffic, no matter how many lanes you have. And again, anybody that's driven around Indianapolis on 65 or 465, you know, there's a lot of traffic down there. Not even those roads approach the numbers that we see on the Borman. So It's a busy stretch of road, and we're just looking for innovative ways to try to tackle it. And that's certainly what we hope this process will help us determine. And you know, I mentioned that this is part of a Pell study. And what a Pell study is in general, it's a multi-year kind of thing, a long-term sort of study. But what it is hyper-focused on public involvement. And that's really what we want here is we want to hear from the stakeholders, the people who use the Borman to get to and from school or work or vacation, leisure, wherever they might be going, and see what they think about some of these various options and whether or not they think they'll work. And we're genuinely interested and need that feedback from the public.
If you will, Adam, would tell us about the two public in-person meetings that are coming up this week and about the one online meeting coming up next week.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, thanks, Chris, for the opportunity to help us spread the word about these. Because again, we really, really do want and need that public input on this project. So there are two in-person public meetings this week, as you mentioned, one on Wednesday, one on Thursday. Both are at 5:00. The one on Wednesday is at 21st Century Charter School in Gary. That's 556 Washington Street over there in Gary. Mm-hmm. And then on Thursday, the 29th at 5:00, it's at Alumni Hall on the Purdue Northwest campus in Hammond. That's 2233 173rd Street in Hammond. So those are two opportunities for members of the public to come, listen to a presentation, and then offer feedback on what they hear and what they see. And then we'll have a virtual option for those who might be more inclined to want to participate virtually via WebEx on Tuesday, August 3rd, and that'll start at 6:00. There is a link to register in advance for that virtual public meeting on indianaflexroad.com.
Now, I know that the concern, of course, of traveling on 8094 a lot of times is dealing with all of the congestion, vehicles of all types, trucks, cars, all sorts of vehicles, but also it's safety as well, too. I guess we think about there are wrecks that happen on 8094. I guess we're lucky they don't happen as often as they could, but it's still, I know, something that NDOT is very concerned about. What's been some of the data that you all have put out about some of the crashes that have happened over, like, in the last couple of years? I know of between 2017 and 2019 were the last two study years. What did NDOT find out about the number of crashes that have happened on 8094?
Sure. Listen, there's two things that drive everything we do here at NDOT, safety and mobility. And safety is a huge part of, and really in most cases, the number one concern that we're looking at to try to make our road network safer. As I mentioned, up to 250,000 vehicles a day can travel this stretch of road. And with that sort of volume comes crashes. And what we want to do is you can't eliminate crashes, right? Mm-hmm. But our goal is always to reduce them and minimize them as much as we possibly can. And we think by increasing mobility, that's why I've said safety and mobility, because they really have to go hand in hand. When people are asked to stop unexpectedly on a high-speed interstate because there's a backup or there's a traffic jam or something like that, that can inherently lead to a safety risk. So we really genuinely believe by increasing mobility, and we see this bear out throughout our entire road network, when you increase mobility, you hand-in-hand goes, you increase safety. So it's obviously a very important part of this. We're calling it Less Stop, More Go, which certainly indicates mobility, but this is all with safety in mind as well.
Now, how long will this take for this Pell study to be done so that you can move along and get more work done and following through on the 8094 Flex Road project itself?
Sure. So currently, we'd be looking at a construction year of 2024 on this. And, I always give dates like that a little bit of a caveat because things can move up or back in the program just based on a number of different things. But again, the Pell study is hyper-focused on public involvement. So we really want to make sure that at every step along the way, so we're in the early stages now, but we want that public input throughout the process. So this is the first round of public information meetings. There will be more. So certainly, watch that website that I mentioned, indianaflexroad.com, and then also our social media outlets here at NDOT Northwest, facebook.com/NDOTNorthwest and at NDOT Northwest on Twitter. We'll have plenty of information on there as this study plays out over the coming years.
Anna Parkhouse is the communications director for the LaPorte District of NDOT, based, of course, in LaPorte, but covers Lake and Porter and LaPorte counties and other counties here in northwest Indiana. And talking in this case about the 8094 Flex Road Project, the first and now a study of and public input as well coming up this week in finding ways to make I-8094 as safe as possible and certainly make the travel a lot smoother for people and trucks as well as vehicles to be able to traverse that road, a very, very extremely busy road, as you've heard. And Adam, thank you for being with us to talk about this. Once again, the public meetings are coming up on July 28th, and it'll be held, and both of them actually, at 5 p.m., and the first one on the 28th will be held at the 21st Century Charter School in Gary, and the 29th meeting at 5 p.m. will be at Alumni Hall at the Purdue University Northwest Campus in Hammond. And Adam, thank you very much for being with us to talk about it today.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.